This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be.
This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing phenomenal, as always. Getting used to the weather change. I can't decide which allergy season is worse for me right now. The winter switchover is just driving me crazy, though. How you doing, Pete?
All right, here in Texas, man, we haven't really had I'd call it, like, in the morning, because I get to work at 5 in the morning. It's chilly then, but when I leave at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's absolutely beautiful out. So to start my day, I won't wear a jacket to work because it's not that cold, but I'll wear a long-sleeve shirt. It's ridiculous that it's December right now, and I haven't even thought about putting my... I put my heater on once for 20 minutes to warm up in the morning when I was taking a shower because I didn't want to come out to a cold, to chilly apartment because it was like 55 degrees in the apartment or 60 or whatever it was. And it's not even close to being cold yet. Has it been close to being cold out in L.A.?
No, it was nice when I was in the Bay, but not in L.A. And then, same thing. We haven't turned our heater on. I was just getting it ready the other day because it almost got cold enough overnight to where I could have used it. But other than that, we haven't even used it. All I was doing was kind of cleaning it out and relighting the pilot and all that because it's a gas heater. But there's no reason to use it, honestly. So, yeah, it hasn't been cold at all, which is troubling because I usually really like the cold part of the year. And just dealing with that is kind of rough that it hasn't cooled off at all.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm still waiting on my Russell Circus refund, which I haven't got yet. So one guy asked it out on Twitter. One person responded saying he got his. So that kind of got me kind of upset. Not upset, but I'm glad they got it. But it's like, how the hell... if you're going to cancel a show, and I get it, and even if it's health reasons or whatever happened, I get it. But... get the money back to people. I ended up going through my bank and putting a file claim on them, saying I want my money back because I'm just pissed off now.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, how did you pay? Because that's the
credit card.
Okay, and because when I had
bank
that
card actually bank when card
when I had that show that canceled, it was PayPal, so it was easy to just go into PayPal and tell them that they to do it, and PayPal will reverse it for you. So. I don't know how the bank will be. The last time when I had trouble with a bank situation like that, they didn't refund me the money, but they gave me back half of it as an apology, and they like let the other person keep the money. It was a real twisted thing. So we'll see how this story ends up, I guess.
Yeah, I'll probably find out. Probably the 10 days. I only used it one other time when I got a, what was it? I bought a bus ticket and, what happened? I can't remember exactly what the story was. Oh, yeah. I lost it, and they wouldn't... And then they... what was it? They... I'm like, well, I have one, but I don't know what happened to it. And they're like, well, we can't print you up another one. You have to buy a new one, another one. And I was like, oh, no. That's not what happened. Okay, now I remember. I bought one online. I got billed for it. On my ATM card, my bank card, get down there to the bus station to pick it up, and it's not there, but I've been charged for it. And then even though I showed them the transaction on my bank statement, they still wouldn't give me the thing, even though I got billed for it. And so they made me buy one there, which was another, it was actually because it's the day of, was like an extra $40. So I filed with my bank card, and they gave me. I got a full refund on the second ticket. I bought the original one, and I have no problem. That thing, I got charged for it, but I don't think I should have had to pay a second ticket since they're the ones of something on error on their end. I had a confirmation number, I had this, I had everything, but it wasn't working on their end and stuff. So my bank was able to get credit me the money and stuff. So so I'm expecting a similar thing since the show never happened and stuff. So we'll see what happens. This is just weird, you know, and that's another, this is, you know, Wrestle Circus, and they're also one of them companies. I don't know if you know this, but they're offering, like, they're publicizing shows like 6-8 a year in advance, so you can actually buy tickets year round already, you know.
Yeah, PCW out here has got a ticket, what's it called, a yearly pass, season pass ticket up for sale for 2018. It says essentially you're paying for 8 tickets in advance, but I mean they've already run, God, 3 years now. They're bringing in Muta for their next big anniversary show. I think it's next year. So, I mean, they've been building up trust, and they're kind of low-key. I mean, they honestly started, I think, a little bit before Wrestle Circus. Well, actually, probably like a year or so before Wrestle Circus.
Well, but they've been running for 4 years. Wrestle Circus has only run for a year now.
Okay, so they were
running. They just had their year anniversary show.
Yeah, and so they were running for, yeah, like 3 years longer than Wrestle Circus. They were slowly putting it together with kind of mixing super indie with local talent, and kind of this, they were like doing the same business model, but just didn't have the same explosion, but also didn't have a lot of the same pushback. And like, people don't really complain about PCW except for maybe they're like working with Kevin Gill stuff. But other than that, and it's just, it's really funny. 'Cause yeah, I could easily see buying a season pass to PCW if I felt, number one, that the venue that they run wasn't so far. And number two, if I felt like the shows were worth it to me. But unfortunately, with their ticket price, which is not terrible, but it's you know, $25 with service fee, it ends up being close to $30 per ticket for the shows that they're running, comparatively to, say, PWG, where I'm already kind of over the price for what you're getting. It's like, to me, it's more worth it to try to get PWG tickets than commit to PCW when I also have like AWS and all the other little indies that run out here that the tickets are much cheaper. So they're unfortunately in like an in-between price bracket for me, but they do well with their fans. So, you know, they that kind of model of doing a season pass is definitely something that works if you've built up that kind of, you know, that trust. But Wrestle Circus doing season passes when they hadn't even been around for a year yet, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and it's not actually season passes per se, but they just announced 12 shows. They put all the tickets on sale.
Okay. Well, I know that they were trying to do, when they were trying to buy that building, they were offering like,
yeah,
something like that was going to be like a season pass, but I think that all fell through anyways.
Yeah, and then the rumor was they bought the building, but now I don't know with, well, you know, with all this going on, it's just so sketchy. And and also the buying the putting tickets on sales for future shows is also kind of, it's an old pyramid scheme in a way. I mean, if it's one thing if you're doing it, and if PCW's been doing it for 4 years, then that's fine stuff. But a new company doing it, I always find I would never buy tickets too much in advance because it always felt kind of sketchy to me. Seeing they were trying to get more money up front for talent, it sounded like, at like, you know, give me the money now and I'll deal with the consequences later type of thing. And and I always had that sketchy feeling about it. And I mean, even if everything's on the up and up, just the way they went out, even canceling a show like 4 or 5 days out. I mean, I put a real sore spot in Miami because there was running so many really good shows in Texas that week, and I chose to go to that show, and it ended up blowing in my face. Like, I could have easily asked off, like, the show on that we aired, that we're going to review later on in NXT. I could have gone to that one in San Antonio. I chose not to, because I didn't want to, because I had to work the next morning, Friday morning. I'm like, I'll just go to the Wrestle Circus. It's like 2 minutes down the street from my apartment. I could have gone to gone to NXT in Houston, or I could have gone to the Ring of Honor one in San Antonio. So there was a lot of options for me on the table, and I chose their company, and then they fucking cancel it. Even if it is true that in the Observer, I mentioned that the owner Al had a health issue where his other job requires extensive traveling, and he wasn't going to have the time. I mean, I get that. But it just sucks to do it last minute like that.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I get what you're saying. I mean, there's a difference between Progress and other companies in the UK and even PCW doing these season passes because their shows are selling out, and it's kind of a hassle to buy all the tickets online. So it's like, hey, it's easy to just know that I'll have tickets for the whole year all at once. But when you talk about, like you said, where you're selling tickets months in advance because you're trying to pay talent for a show that's happening this weekend, that's when you start getting into that where they say you're robbing Peter to pay Paul kind of situation.
Right.
And that's a real problem.
This is straight speculation. I have no idea if that's what they were doing. But they always had that reputation of barely being able to pay off the talent that week, or asking talents to take a "can we pay you in a couple of days" type of stuff.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And then I kind of wonder how that affects his brother in the business, if this stench sticks to him, where a lot of promotions don't want to book him because he has the Russell Circus stench to him, you know?
Well, I mean, were people really booking him, though?
He started getting bookings around Texas.
Yeah, and he was working in the Northeast for a while before Wrestle Circus started, but I haven't really seen if he's been getting much bookings out there anymore. So
Well, he moved down to Texas once Wrestle Circus started, and okay. So he started getting more bookings around Texas a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. There's obviously the NWA kind of connection that's still linked up to Texas. I think that probably if you're smart and you're having money issues, I don't know, again, speculation, linking up with them right now in whatever way they're trying to would probably be one of your best bets, honestly.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'm just sore that they, I mean, not like it was that much money, the ticket, but it's just the damn principle that I didn't get to go see live wrestling that week because I chose to go to that show.
Right, and that really sucks that you kind of missed out on that. And you know, it has been kind of fun on this show. We've really kind of gone through the history of this wrestling company from when they started up to you going then. We even interviewed Al on the podcast, yeah. And everything, you know. So it's kind of funny as they've kind of became the talk of the internet. I think a lot of it has died down. I think people still talk about them, but not as much as they were before. So, you know, they're kind of dying down on their buzz. They weren't really, you know, having these big special attractions as much. And I think they kind of, maybe they burnt out too quick. Who knows? We'll see.
Funny is, like, Al came across to, like, a pretty nice guy when we interviewed him. But the company, I would just rub people the wrong way completely, you know?
Yeah, it was really interesting the way that all went down. But, you know, who knows? Maybe that had something to do with other people that were kind of getting involved with the company as well.
That's true. The Condren is Jervis, right?
Yeah.
Okay. he's trouble.
I don't even want to get into it too much, but he did some kind of Periscope or Facebook Live or something, I remember, and he was on there dressed up like Jervis Cottonbelly complaining about, you know, the pay stuff and talking about how he was being asked to not cash checks and all this. And then a few months later, he's back all involved as a manager and commentator and wrestler. And he's working with Dave Marquez, setting up the kind of relationship between the United Wrestling Network and them and all that. So it's just, yeah, the whole thing was just very interesting the whole way through, honestly.
Yeah, what's also interesting is, I mean, they do leave their fingerprints on, like, they're really, weren't they really truly the first company that used Twitch as a way to get on, using Twitch as a streaming service?
I know CMLL or no, AAA used it, but it might have been after.
It's doing it, but I thought Wrestle Circus did it first.
I know that AAA did a one-time thing, and then, but Wrestle Circus might have been the first ones to do it. They may have been.
Yeah, I know AAA's now done it. I think House of Hardcore did it.
Wrestling Pro Wrestling, which is Brian Kendrick's promotion, is using it now. So, yeah, it's becoming maybe a viable option for other people. But then there's also Powerbomb, High Spots. I mean, it's, I don't know if Twitch is really necessary, but we'll see.
No, I don't. I just, but I find it interesting.
Right, right.
Because, I mean, if for a wrestling fan, I don't know how it worked. I mean, because I got my subscription through Amazon Prime. So if I followed them, I was able to watch their streaming. But I only can only follow one person, you know, to get right. it for free. So who knows? But hey, let's get into some watching some footage instead of having me whine about fucking $37 or whatever. We got CWF Worldwide, the RGL. You know, I was impressed with a lot of these guys on this show. I thought the future looked bright. Gotta have shades, I guess, if you will. They some guys there impressed me, and I thought they a lot of these guys could really help flush out the program, give them some fresh blood, and get ready to, and can really contribute even as early as now. What do you think about this?
This is an impressive kind of tournament of students, honestly. Everybody in here under 3 years experience. There was a lot to like on this show. It was actually probably one of the better episodes of CWF of the year, all in all. Even not concluding kind of the bonus match. Like, even before right. the bonus match, it was already a damn good show from the students here. Even Metallico, who we've seen a couple times and has not stood out for me, he had a really solid match as well.
Yeah, I liked him. I felt he was a good bumper. You know, we had Daddy, of course, and Mace Lee are kind of like kind of the names, name value in a way. Felt Jesse Adler had his best match since he's come back. I liked Ivan Ali a lot. The Pitbull, that guy, I could work, man. He engaged the crowd. All his stuff looked good. He looked great eating a brain buster. Mike Mars, another great guy with big size. Cool J is an interesting character. Moneymaker and Big Time Yaya. I mean, all these guys brought something to it. And it's curious how much they're going to use some of these guys going forward. Because I can tell you, the guy I thought was the best worker out of the whole entire bunch, I thought was the Pitbull, where he had all the tools while Ivan Ali and Mike Mars had the size that screamed a big-time player. But I felt like the Pitbull could come in and have really good matches, like with Dirty. Well, obviously we saw him with Dirty Daddy, but he could have a collection of really good matches with a lot of talent on the roster. Well, who are the guys who stood out to you the most?
The Pitbull was definitely, I think, the standout for me the most as well. And he had a nice mix of kind of like a rookie version of almost Nick Gage, but also has some like MMA real fighter stuff to him. His promo I thought was great and believable. There's just something to him. Like I said, I think the comparison to Nick Gage really just comes down to the fact that he felt super real and super believable and dangerous, when a lot of guys in wrestling don't feel like that now. Like I said, from the promo in the back to coming out to the ring, working the crowd, to the match itself, he was real solid and comes across like a real fighter, solid wrestler, obviously nothing, you know, crazy, but real good for a student, but has that poise, has that presence, comes across like a big time, almost like a vet already as a young kid. I don't know how old he is, but he's young in wrestling. He to me was the revelation, especially because they haven't really had him come out. I haven't noticed him. They did say that he was returning.
Yeah, the first I've seen him.
Yeah, they said he was returning, but I don't know from when, because me and you haven't seen him, and we've been watching CWF every week for a while.
And if he did return, it wasn't anything he didn't really impress us the first time around. And here he did, and the poise is right there. The key word is poise. Like me and you, we talk about it. I always talk about guys who could go and talk trash and engage the crowd. It's not you don't feel like you're pretending to be a wrestler. He felt like he was a wrestler talking shit to the crowd, as opposed to the what's his name, Big Time Yaya, when he was talking to the crowd a little bit, it felt a little more forced, if you will. It didn't feel as natural. While Pitbull was all natural, it felt everything. And the thing he does, which a lot of people don't credit enough, was what he was doing was smart. He was doing stuff that made him look good. He didn't try anything that didn't, that you're like, eh. Like, even like our guy, who's that? What's his name? Cam Carter, who I like a lot. I think he has a lot of charisma. But sometimes some of his strikes look a little like, ugh, you know, like you, that could have been better. Or that didn't really look good at times. We didn't see that out of the Pitbull. Everything he did was he did stuff he did that he knows he did well, does well. And I think that's something that's smarter, because when you're a wrestler and you're doing stuff and it doesn't look good, it doesn't reflect well on you. You should be smarter enough not to be trying stuff out in front of a crowd that you know you don't do real well yet. That's what practicing for. And you should when you're going out and making a debut or you know, first, second, third match, stick to the stuff that you do well. And I felt that's what Pitbull did really well here.
Yeah, for sure. He was kind of meat and potatoes, but the garnish and the kind of sizzle was the promo work and the character work, and that was what really made it made him super stand out. I would say otherwise, other kind of standouts, probably Mike Mars is obviously getting a big time push. They're going somewhere with him, and I'm definitely liking it. Dirty Daddy kind of has come into his own. When they had the Mike Mars Dirty Daddy standoff, I was kind of shocked to see that Daddy looked so close to the same size. They were pushing Mike Mars as a monster, but I hadn't really noticed how tall Daddy got. And I was thinking back to the first time I saw Daddy when he was a fresh-faced baby, and the kind of the joke of him being an old-timer was, you know, that he looked so young back then, but he's kind of grown into his, you know, grown into himself. He's got the facial hair. He's obviously put on a little bit of size. And it's kind of funny because the character almost doesn't work in the same way as it used to, but he's grown with it and become more of a serious wrestler and kind of turned it into a different thing, which is really kind of impressive there as well. And then I would say the eye-openers was Movie Mike and Big Time Yah. Together, they really they kind of tore it down. I was impressed by that. And Movie Mike is a guy that neither of us have been into. Like I said, they weren't standouts performance-wise overall, but they were eye-openers. Hey, maybe I need to give these guys a second shot.
Exactly. You know, I'm with you on that completely. Other than I thought Big Time Yah engaging the crowd, I thought him and Movie Mike inside the ring had a good match, though. We opened up here with Jesse Adler versus Ivan Ali, and I thought this match was really spot on perfect for a TV title match. Ali looks like the monster. I'm liking Adler doing the hit and run psychology from Adler, where he's hitting Ali and going, you know, not standing toe to toe with the monster, going after him, hitting him from different angles. I think that's really smart work. And I thought Ali's offense looked varied. It looked varied enough with the different variations of suplexes. So when he was working on top, it was engaging and interesting too. But I thought the key was Adler, the storytelling here. And I thought it was really spot on and really highlighted Ivan Ali and made him look great. And Adler looks great in the win. Just a really good 3 stars. I mean, I thought it was a legit 3-star match. I thought it was laid out really beautifully. And I thought these guys did a great job. And, of course, we're going to see more of Adler. But, man, I want to see more of Ivan Ali. I think there's something there about him I liked. What about you? What did you think of the match?
Ali, one of his big issues here to me was he comes out and he didn't really sell me on what he was, who he was. I didn't see his character, you know what I mean? And Adler, unfortunately, he's not weak, but he's bland, I think, as a character right now. He's definitely a blue chip athlete kind of guy, and him coming back has really brought a lot to the RGL in general. I think it's really upped the work rate of the RGL, and especially now him having the TV title kind of helps integrate the rest of the kind of younger guys who are just about probably to age out of the RGL. It kind of helps to elevate all of them with him up the card and into more serious kind of action going on. So that said, with neither guy being, I really felt like Ali was just a little, he seemed nervous. I think he was trying to put on an air of being like this wrecking machine, but to me he came out and I just couldn't tell what he was trying to sell me, just on his entrance. In the match itself, he was good, strong.
I'm shocked you're saying that, because, I mean, I picked up on it immediately that he was a monster. They even shot up at him. They gave him a special angle on his entrance. So I'm going to have to disagree with you there. But
That's production. I'm talking about his facials. If you look at his face, you weren't exactly,
I wasn't clear on that, because, I mean, it's both. I mean, yeah, I mean, it might be production, but that helps his character. I mean,
yeah, that helps. But
I mean,
to
if
me,
you get the big pyro, I mean, that's, you're going to get a bigger pop, too, because of production. I mean, again, they make you stand out as a star. Production helps you when you're trying to stand out as a star. And I thought they did that with Adler here. Not Adler, I meant Ali.
Well, to me, like I said, it's the facials. He looked like he comes out. He's kind of looks nervous. He's kind of looking around. He can clearly not tell where he should be looking. He just, to me, he came across like just a little nervous, not polished. He enters the ring, unlike everyone else throughout the show who goes down the stairs to walk around the ring. He goes in the ring, he goes to one side, he goes to the other, then finally he finds Andrews. And that could be blocking. It could have been that he didn't know where to find Andrews, but clearly he was going to look for Andrews, but he couldn't find him. Then he exits the ring to go to him to do their little interaction. And then, like I said, once the match and the work starts, then I get it. Then I see who he is. But I think that they gave him something that he may have not been completely prepared for, and maybe this is a big deal for him. And it just wasn't selling it to me the first second I saw it. The production, like you said, the angle did a good job on putting over that he's supposed to be a big monster. In the match, he did a great job. Adler, again, in-ring great, needs to find something to make his character stand out a little bit more. But
He needs a hook.
Yeah, but then the match itself, again, bell to bell, great stuff. And obviously Adler, like I said, he's a star of the division right now for the younger guys, and definitely a big plus for them to have him return.
Adler feel like Chet Sterling light to you, like a non-charismatic Chet Sterling in a way?
In a lot of ways, yeah. And I could almost see Chet Sterling with so much kind of gimmickry added on top of him with the sideburns and the glasses and the tie and everything else, that they're kind of like just, they were piling stuff on to make him stand out. And he may have even had some of the same issues as Adler early on, because I didn't see Chet Sterling when he was first starting out. So I could definitely see where you're coming from on that.
And you hit on it. And we also had Eric Andrews come out, and he does the, you know, Andrews for TV gimmick. And again, I thought he got over like $1 million doing this. And, I thought he was just absolutely tremendous, kind of like in his own little world, you know, free of everyone else's in his way, but he's kind of like, they're there, and he interacts with them, but he's still in his own, like, foggy world of Andrews for television. And, I mean, it's just, I'm loving his character right now. Well, what about you?
Yeah, Andrews is phenomenal, and... And the shaved, even just the shaved face, I don't know what it is. He just looks so different. He looks like a totally different guy without the goatee and everything.
Yeah, he does look sleazy.
No, but he has a totally different kind of vibe to him where you almost, yeah, I just almost can't pick it. I can't put it, figure it out quite yet, but it's very good. And he is playing this character up to the hilt and making it really work. And just, this was just phenomenal. Yeah, the whole... Oh, I'm taking my name out of contention, and well, your name isn't in contention.
Yeah,
yeah. I just thought that was just so great. Like him and Stutz interact with each other so well, and this character is just another wrinkle for Andrews, and just how good he is, just coming out of nowhere with this randomly late in the year, just being like, "Hey, I'm gonna completely switch the script, drop the title, and just completely change." It's really impressive that he's been able to almost seamlessly transition this way.
And here we had CL Party on commentary all the way through. A lot of times they'll throw CL and Kane when Cecil isn't there. I'm glad they didn't have Kane there. I think that he needs to get away from the RGL. And I think giving CL Party something extra to do, I thought was great, and I enjoyed her. I thought she's getting, again, she's really... you know, for the backup play-by-play, backup announcer, I think she's really strong. And I mean, she might be the best female announcer in wrestling right now when it comes to, you know, talking about the wrestling going on. You think that's a fair statement, or am I watching enough females? There's not a whole lot of them, I know that.
That's the thing. That's definitely fair, but it's also unfairly just there's not a lot of competition. You know, and it just kind of sucks that there isn't other women out there doing commentary. But yeah, I mean, she does a great job. She hangs in there. And I kind of love that CWF has kind of a junior varsity commentary team for shows like this, and they don't have the A-team when they have, like, special shows. I think it really actually adds something to it. And it really, to me, it stands out. There's a big point later where it stands out a lot to me that they have a different commentary team. And, I mean, I guess it's not necessarily a major positive in that setting, but it is noticeable, which I think is kind of the point.
What do you think about having Kane not on it? Do you think it was a smart move, keeping him away from the RGL?
Yeah, I would say keep Kane off of commentary unless it's, you know, really big time for him to shine and you're doing a lot of stuff around him. Because
as I talked about, they used him last time, yeah.
Yeah, because as I said last time, he kind of chews up the scenery on commentary, even makes it all about himself, which is good for him. But this was about getting over these younger stars, so I think you needed to have somebody in there that can help get them over.
And, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, Stutzy here, he's giving CL time, gives her, you know, lets her do the play-to-do's interviews, and then, I mean, and she's earned it, and that she also gets to do some play-by-play and some color, and then just a few months back, Stutzy was getting hell for being a sexist pig on Twitter.
Yeah, and
he's one of the leading guys when you think about it for giving women breaks in wrestling.
I know, and he's shown time and time again the way that he'll book kind of intergender stuff as if it's not even necessarily intergender, it's just wrestling, and he follows a lot of this. I mean, he's obviously got a predilection for ladies. He's into
right.
women.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong with that, and sometimes he's open and kind of comments about his, you know, his preferences, and there was the issues on Twitter, but it seems like when it comes time for a professional setting, he's pretty respectful. I haven't worked with him directly, and I'm not a woman, so I can't say, even if I had worked with him directly, but to me, I mean, yeah, he's giving a lot of chances to women, and he's, as I said, he's definitely frames them in a positive light most of the time.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, I mean, really, when you think about it, like, with CL, and recently with Faye Jackson getting over there, and Alley Sis. Cat. Who? Sis.
Sis. The way that he used Sis, it was as if she wasn't even a woman half the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's just numerous examples of it, and so I thought I'd throw that out there. Then we got a Dirty Daddy interview. How was that, man?
It's good stuff. I think one thing, as I talked about his transition kind of out of the Dirty Daddy character, is it felt like he's a little bit over-reliant on the Jack and saying Daddy and Jack all the time.
Yeah.
It almost comes across a little tacked on, like he knows he's supposed to say it a bunch, and it's just not quite the same anymore now that I'm seeing him as more of a multi-dimensional character. So going to need to work on freshening up his promo style slightly. That said, still really great fiery promo that gets you excited to see his matches. But as his character evolves, I think his promo style needs to evolve with it.
And what about the Pitbulls interview, introducing us to him?
I mean, fantastic. Like I said, the guy comes across like an MMA, like one of these MMA gym douchebags from the South mixed with Nick Gage. It's just perfect stuff.
And then they had the match. What were your thoughts here on the Pitbull versus Dirty Daddy?
Well, Pitbull spends pretty much the whole match just talking trash to everyone he can, which is just phenomenal. Working over the crowd. Working over Dirty Daddy throughout. Daddy, obviously, this great underdog babyface, able to kind of sell big and just kind of flip-flop and fly, throwing all of his limbs around. Daddy throws a hell of a great right hand. I mean, that's one thing you can say about everyone trained in CWF is they all have great punches, man. I mean,
they have great punches, and they all seem to be – they have a good basic grappling background, it seems like, too. Like, they all seem like – well, Daddy actually might be the worst at grappling in the whole company, but for the most part, I think they all are really good. They all feel comfortable on the mat.
Yeah, and that's necessary. I mean, it comes back to the basics of wrestling, and everyone should have you know, some proficiency on the mat, because that's how you start every wrestling match, and then have those big punches that look good, because, yeah, you don't need a whole roster of people throwing shitty punches, you know what I mean?
No.
And that's definitely not what you have here at CWF. You could build, I mean, look at, you know, Lawler. He built his whole career around a good punch. Like, you can have hundreds, thousands of wrestling matches with some decent mat skills and a good punch, and you can go for decades. So, I'm loving Daddy's new finish. The airplane spin into the brainbuster, I think, is just really cool for him. And yeah, so I thought this match was real solid. Helped get Daddy by here. I guess I would say the only bummer for me is just how much I really liked the Pitbull. I would have liked to have seen him get through the second round, you know?
Yeah, so many good stuff, like we covered earlier. But, man, the Pitbull selling that brainbuster like death. I mean, it looked like he was KO'd with it. I mean, he put it over. And he took it. And he took it wickedly too. But he put it over like a kill shot. And I loved it. And that leads us to Mace Lee and Metalico. I thought this was a good solid match again, with Metalico showing a lot more promise than he's seen, than he's shown before. But you know what? He's been only been used really much for tackling dummy fodder. So here, I thought he looked competitive, looked like a really good bumper. It looked like he had some athletic, some good athleticism. And I'm curious. I'm sure that once he's ready to go, that gimmick's gonna go away, and he'll get a chance to really shine. But man, I really liked him, and I thought Mace Lee did a good job controlling the match. What about you, brother?
Yeah, I'm with you there. I thought Mace Lee, this was good for him to make him look good. Kind of go over a lower card guy. Metalico looked pretty solid, bumping around, flying here and there. But Mace Lee working over the arm, setting up that big arm breaker for the finish, which was a great little hold for him. And definitely just looked super sick and can kind of help legitimize Mace Lee, as we've talked before, about needing to need to kind of rehab him a little bit from being a comedy guy. And I think that they've done a good job of it, especially having a killer hold that looks real good like that can definitely do a lot to help put a guy back over.
Yeah, it's just tough because he's just, you know, he's with the all-stars. So it's just so hard because there's so much mic time and so much in-ring time you can get in the all-star group, because, I mean, that's the elite, you know?
Yeah, no, that's definitely true.
That leads us to a Cool J interview. And what were your thoughts on the Cool J interview?
I mean, I got nothing out of it. He really, it felt like it was hard to get any personality out of him. And, like, he just said a couple words and I don't know. I mean, you could definitely say that you buy into it, like, that's really him. But it wasn't dynamic. It didn't really draw me in at all.
Well, I'm the opposite. I bought into it hook, line, and sinker. And the way the guy, I mean, it's just almost like it feels like, I know they're not, but it feels like they're building up him getting murdered week after week after week to finally getting that 1-2-3 kid type flash pin. And I think, I think the crowd might go bonkers because of how well he's been murdered and destroyed. And we saw all the great hope spots we got in the next match with Mike Mars, and the crowd was biting into it. That, I mean, it feels like they have something with him, but I think his immaturity backstage might keep it from coming to fruition, if you will. With that said, what do you think of the Mars and Cool J match?
I liked it. I thought, like you said, I thought Cool J kind of getting some teases here and there worked. Definitely helped to kind of build up the mystique of Mars being a giant here. Just catching Cool J over and over again out of the air. Love that pop-up headbutt that he does. It's such a cool little move for Mike Mars. To me, Mike Mars plays the brooding big-time monster really well. Got the long hair that flows over his face all the time and just kind of helps to make him look even more imposing. And I think they got something here with this kid. I think he could probably break out. There's something there. It's working. The way that they're pushing him and protecting him. But it could also be it's kind of the Paul Heyman ECW thing, where who knows what Mike Mars would look like outside of the setting of CWF, where they're really kind of protecting him big time.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how they go forward with him.
Yeah, and I especially like the finality of the match and the visualization of Morris pinning him with his foot on his chest. 1, 2, 3. Very final, very brutal, very I just whipped your ass. I'm a monster, you're not type of thing, and I like that. I like kind of like humiliating an undercard guy. And then we got the Moneymaker versus Big Time Yah. What do you think of this one?
Again, I think we talked about it earlier. I thought I wouldn't have expected that these guys would have had it when it came time to deliver in a big spot here going for the time limit match. I thought Yah looked really good early on, flying around for a big man. Really made that kind of work. I thought that Movie Maker Mike, he played his role here as the kind of smaller sized heel working over the arm, showing me a lot of kind of ruthless aggression, playing with the crowd as he goes through. Yah underdog selling for the big man on his back worked really well too. It was all in all, I mean, this was, like I said, it was kind of an eye-opener because these are two guys who I really didn't have high opinions of coming in, but you turn around and they really bring it. Mike having the hoopla and the extras, as they're calling them, which I thought was great. And then, yeah, it looks like Yah might be able to pull it off, but he gets the time limit called on him. And good stuff. And, you know, you talk about they bring up their training and that they kind of train together, their background. You end up with a time limit here. And, I mean, now you make a dynamic rematch. Now you make an exciting return with no time limit or maybe just a longer time limit. And actually something that I'd want to see from two guys who, as I said, had no expectation coming in. It's just another showing of the CWF booking kind of making something out of nothing. I did not care about these guys going in and then coming out. I'm super excited to see them have a rematch. So that's really impressive just from a booking standpoint, let alone, you know, the match itself. You know, it wasn't, yeah, it's not going to be in my match of the year conversation, but it was still very good. Yep. Like I said, just coming in here with no expectations.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. And then we get to the finals, which is Dirty Daddy and Mace Lee. And I loved, I thought this was a really smartly worked match again. I like Daddy's early shine, and I liked Jerry Carey setting up Lee's heat. Lee's heat worked. Dirty Daddy with the comeback gets the win, and that sets up Mars, who got to bye because of the time limit draw, versus Daddy at Battlecade for the championship. I think Mike Mars goes out on top there, but these guys get to open up Battlecade and see what we got, and we'll, I think this is going to be a good test for Daddy to see. I think on paper it sounds interesting because it feels like, you know, give Daddy maybe a minute of the match to shine, but then give 4 minutes of Mike Mars kicking the shit out of him, and either Daddy steals a squeak pin or Mars goes over strong, and we get a whole entire different type of RGL champion than we've never really had in the last couple of years with the Monster. And we could see him just dominate other young guys and be interesting in a way. And it's a way we haven't seen in CWF really push a guy with the Monster push and then give him the belt and then watch him beat some of these other, RGL candidates, just kind of squashing them and building. And you know what? Because I'm a firm believer, man. Watching somebody kick the shit out of somebody, it's hard not to get over when you're going over strong like that. So I'm kind of curious on the progression. Excuse me. But man, overall, I thought it was a good final match to set it up. And I thought their interaction was gold. What about you, man?
Yeah, I thought that the match itself was done really well. Mace Lee having Jerry Carey on the outside, helping him out and getting ejected pretty early on. The only thing I thought was weird is Jerry Carey just kept, I think he was trying to just be, he's hopping mad, but he just kept seemingly like just jumping to try to show that he was angry. And I just thought it was really funny to be like, I don't really know that that's how people react when they get upset, as they just jump in place. But yeah, from there, get into the match and Daddy pretty much gets the win pretty quickly with just the roll up there. And then the stare down, as I talked about earlier, with Daddy and Mars kind of almost not necessarily looking almost, you know, eye to eye, pretty close. So I was kind of impressed. I'm like, I didn't realize Mars either isn't as big as they sell him to be, or Daddy's bigger than I realized, which is impressive too, because, you know, Daddy wrestles so small that to me a lot of times he comes across like the underdog automatically because he's little and he's
Daddy,
big.
Daddy has some, you know, he has that hair thing going where it gives him some height, you know.
Yeah, that definitely helped with the stare down. But like I said, when he wrestles, he always comes across like he's definitely the underdog, and he's actually not that small. So this is gonna be some good stuff. I'm excited for that. And Daddy really turns up the intensity, getting held back while he's trying to get face to face with Mars. So that's definitely an exciting finish. For the episode, and then we fade to black and come back 10 minutes later, and that was the bonus match. I don't know if you were planning on reviewing that here or what.
Oh, well, of course we are, but I want to talk about Daddy Mars. Where do you think they go? Do you think they go put Mars over strong and give him the big monster RGL push this year? Because Daddy's been a history of being the setup guy for a lot of these guys. He was like the setup guy for Kane last year in a way, you know?
Yeah, I would think it feels like that's got to be it, honestly. It feels like it's got to go to him next there. But, I mean, there's still
Mars like, up me- for a year to be the monster who takes down Trevor, maybe? Nah. But definitely they'll build him up to face Trevor.
Yeah, I would say for sure build him up. I don't think he gets that high
to
take Trevor out. But I mean, he could go a year with the belt. He could go a year with the belt and win the tournament again next year, even, I can see. You know, they could do something like that. But
Never been beat RGL champion. Never been beat, and he moves up.
Yeah, something like along those lines. Like I could see working, but I don't know. I mean, I would assume yes. I think Daddy being 2-time champion, even though he just got the belt recently, I think that might actually be a red herring, or I guess a MacGuffin. They're trying to like make you think that there's no way he would lose the title again so fast, but realistically, he probably, you know, being the first 2-time champion, shouldn't have even gotten a second reign. So it may have just been a transition to go from heel to heel. And honestly, pretty smart way to do it. So,
Completely different worker than what Kane was, you know?
Yeah,
as
exactly.
In we get the monster versus, like, you know, guy putting on 12-minute, 3.5-star matches regularly. You know, you can arguably make the argument that Kane was honestly the MVP of the week-to-week CWF Mid-Atlantic Television this last year, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, I can definitely see that. The Kane was, I mean, I think the story of CWF in 2017 was kind of Kane in a lot of ways, and they even kind of showed that in the Rumble, making him the final one with Trevor there. I think it was to kind of put a fine point on that 2017 was all about Kane. So you could see the next year seeing him continue to grow, but also needing a new young guy to focus on, and Mars could be that guy.
Is that Rumble the best match they've put on this year, you think?
Probably. For me, yeah.
For me,
definitely. I would say I really, really loved that Rumble match. I thought that they did a phenomenal job just with the storytelling and everything throughout, and making it end up feeling like a big deal. I would say, yeah, probably has to be it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, Battle Kid. But yeah, it was pretty fantastic. Then we get this, like, Trevor Lee comes out after Darius Lockhart's had a match, and he cuts a really fun, nice promo saying how hard everyone worked, that he feels like he wants to defend his title. He got motivated and by everyone working hard and having good matches, that he wants to give the crowd and everyone in the back something special and give him a title, give Darius Lockhart a title match. What'd you make of the match, though?
I thought it was probably a real good match, especially a real good match up, especially for Trevor with his style and with Darius having that background of training some time in the UK and being able to work the mat really well. They got to show that off in the beginning. There's a lot of struggle, a lot of real, you know, intricate grappling work being done by both guys, pulling out some stuff that's unique and you don't see all the time. Decent arm work kind of throughout by Trevor. Really did a good job of helping make Darius look on Trevor's level. Breaking down with some striking, some kind of still looking for the Greco-Roman knuckle lock, but Trevor's throwing some kicks, and you can see at a point that that Darius just gets fucking fed up with it, so he chops Trevor in the chest. And that's where you really think that Trevor kind of fires up. He's done kind of playing around at that point, it seems. He pops the hand, starts to work him over a little bit more viciously, and I really liked that, because Trevor, it's almost like there is kind of this attitude problem with Trevor that they show. I even think coming out, supposedly he comes out on his own without any kind of, you know, whatever, and he just wants to, no kind of forethought, he's not even wearing his gear, and he just wants to put his title up on the line for, essentially, for the sport of it, from watching these kids, it got him fired up. And like I said, as he's looking for the Greco-Roman knuckle lock kind of thing, after they've been messing around with each other, he's throwing kicks to the leg, kicks to the thighs, but the idea that Darius would throw a chop at him when they're supposed to be grappling, it kind of, like I said, just shows Trevor has this attitude issue where he thinks of himself as almost above the basic rules or the unspoken rules of a gentlemanly grappling contest, but if someone else tries to do something similar, he can't stand for that, you know, and so then it kind of breaks down from there into more of a fight and less of a gentleman's grappling contest. From there, I thought some really nice looking stuff. Great knees from Darius Carter. Yeah, a bunch of really good knee strikes. The jump up double stomp from Trevor always looks great. Just really good work here all around. Both guys selling well. Both guys going back and forth. I really felt like they did a good job of helping make Darius look good, but never, I don't think there was anything that really felt like a big time Darius could have got the win there spots. So I think that they definitely entrenched that Trevor was better, but he definitely showed that Darius is getting even better. He's getting even bigger. He's getting there. He may get to that level soon. And just had a lot of really, really, really fun, stiff striking, everything. And then finally the finish. I kind of loved that Trevor gets the finish with, he is going for the STF, but he almost like just lets go of the leg and just has a really stiff, nasty looking cross face. Looks like he's really putting some extra torque in it, and Darius gives it up there. I just thought really great way to top off the show. It's getting to the end of the year, and I'm thinking about Wrestler of the Year stuff. We don't know Wrestling 100. Also doing me and Quentin doing our top 50 again for Psychology is Dead, which I feel like is kind of an offshoot of the We Don't Know Wrestling 100 for me, because those lists kind of tend to overlap. And Trevor's a guy who I've been having some trouble placing, just because this year his output hasn't been quite the same. I haven't been paying as much attention to AAW. I feel like he's been solid in PWG, but not quite the level that he was last year. But then you turn around and you see him in CWF, and he has matches like this, and it's hard to argue. You talk about the Rumble, you talk about this match, talk about the match with Alex Daniels, the six-pack challenge, Chip Day match, the match tagging with Chip Day, even the Elgin match, Eric Royal match. I think there was two of them this year even. And you start thinking about, like, God, when he is on, he's clearly one of the best in the world. So where do you put a guy like that? It's the same kind of argument for New Japan guy placement. It's like, well, they have so few big singles matches a year, but they're so goddamn good when they have them. How do you think about them? And Trevor just keeps showing over and over again just how phenomenal he really is in the ring. He just needs a place other than CWF that maybe a little bit more full-time that focuses on him in a similar way. And I think he's one of the best, you know, he's top 10, you know, top 3, top 5 worker on the planet right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Trevor. I like this style. The one thing I will say is, as the ace of the company, he doesn't get out of that comfort zone real much of the style he's working, as opposed to like Eric Royal, where we can see him work. We can see him do the Trevor Lee, but we see him do brawls. We see him do more comedy. We see him do tags. Well, Trevor Lee kind of works the Trevor Lee style main event match, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's one of my favorite styles in wrestling. So, it's not aimed at a knock. It's just that it's almost like the New Japan main event style with Okada in a way that, you know, you're getting a Okada style main event. And I think it's the same thing with Trevor Lee, where they don't come out of their comfort zone too much. But what their comfort zone is really good. I didn't love this match. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a good grappling match, but nothing really hooked me in on the story. Usually Trevor takes me on a wild ride on the story, and here the match didn't seem as focused. It seemed more like a friendly non-tournament match in a way. Even though it was for the title, it felt more like there wasn't anything truly at stake. It just felt like two guys, like, hey, let's roll around on the mat, you know?
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And like I said, I thought once it kind of did get out of that zone, it was definitely pretty good. But I could definitely see the seeing that it kind of went that way a little bit too long.
Yeah. I mean, it got a little bit heated, but for the most part, it was just like, it was too babyface-ish for me. Maybe that's what it was. And then now for Trevor's style, it works both ways. But I've seen him work enough babyface matches where I kind of want to see the heel versus babyface style. But man, another home run of CWF. Really, totally enjoyed it. What about you, man?
Yeah, and this was the place where I wanted to mention that, is that a big Trevor title defense, I could definitely feel the difference without Cecil on commentary. And even Stutzy tried to fill in some way by referencing that, like saying Cecil would say that the crowd is giving us a real Japanese kind of reaction on the way that they were reacting or acting. And it definitely stood out. And again, that's no knock on CL, but it's just the A-team commentary is what you're used to for the big Trevor Lee matches. So I think not having Cecil there definitely kind of made this match feel like it was on that lower tier of Trevor Lee title defenses for sure. And it also it changed the feeling of the match overall. But it did also add to, as I talked about it, that it makes these shows feel unique. It makes the RGL shows feel special because they have a different feel. And that's really impressive that CWF has kind of fostered this identity so well that just a commentary change can make the whole show feel completely different, on top of other, you know, obviously other factors that make the show feel different. Easy thumbs up. Great episode. I mean, just best wrestling product, best weekly television show out there. The only one I really care to watch, if I'm perfectly honest. Like, you know, we watch NXT 2 here, and I'll watch some other wrestling weekly TV shows here and there that we don't review on the site. But the only one that I really give a shit about that I would definitely watch every week no matter what is CWF. I mean, it's just so good. And I really love the episodic nature of it, the way they build to everything. The matches always deliver in their roles, and it's just a phenomenal show overall.
Yeah, I totally agree. And folks, we're just getting started. We're on the road to Battlecade. And it starts now, and we'll be covering it all the way up to Battlecade, baby. So get ready, folks. On that note, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with some NXT from San Antonio.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new. You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. all of these shows, plus others available on PlaceofNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceofNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're back at looking at NXT from San Antonio. I went here last year or the year before for a house show, right? And I can't believe they shot it for television because it's a horrible place visually for a television taping because it's a theater. You're looking, it's like that's where those chairs were on the camera side. Not on the camera side, but what the camera picked up. They weren't there for the house show because that was just a stage. But it looked like they put up like two rows or three rows of chairs that could get up on the chair on there so it wouldn't look totally terrible for TV. But honestly, the way it's set up, all the people are on the hard cam side because it holds like 2,000 people. And you would not tell, you couldn't tell that by looking at any of the crowd shots, could you?
No, not at all. Honestly, it looks like the place is just like sparsely populated, like very sparsely populated, honestly.
Yeah, everything's on the hard camera side.
Yeah, you could tell because everyone kind of faces towards the hard camera. They do it anyways, but you can kind of tell that they're like really focusing on where the actual crowd is at, I guess, on the hard camera side throughout the whole show. I mean, why wouldn't they just set up the hard cam on the opposite side, though? I don't get it.
I don't think you could, because I think it would look really weird. Because I think the hard camera, I don't think they have a high enough spot to put it.
Yeah, because it's just up against the wall there. Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you only have X amount you can go backwards at, and that's where the hard camera is in the building, is aimed from a recording booth. Yeah, it's just it's a weird setup for TV. I was shocked they aired it when I saw it. I'm like, oh man, this is weird. And then I see it, and they have some chairs where last at the house show there were no chairs where they were, but they didn't want to have just a curtain to be shooting into. That's what it is. I guess they needed to do something because of everything they're on tour. So. But one thing I find interesting, I hear that they're not going to be Full Sail. They're not going to be shooting at Full Sail all the time right now. And you know what? Hearing the reaction here from the show tonight, I bet the workers are pretty damn happy to get out there and be able to try stuff that might not get a reaction at Full Sail, but it might get a reaction because it's fresh and new somewhere else with a fresh audience and not as jaded audience. I think NXT will do better actually being out going to different spots to tape their TV. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Full Sail thing, from what I heard, it's not an issue. It's just that the arena is booked for something else,
right?
For a while, so they're gonna go back, obviously. But they might actually even be better off not taping at Full Sail so much, because yeah, I mean, that crowd is spoiled and can kind of be shitty about stuff. They really are
snarky.
It's really snarky and really smarky and really just kind of like chanting to hit their spots in a lot of places. It doesn't get on my nerves like I think it does some people, but it definitely does affect the product in some ways. And having a crowd that's more just authentically there for the show is maybe a lot better. And I mean, this was going to be the issue that was going to happen that was going to arise when they started having kind of the touring brand and then the local brand. Because they still do have the like house show Largo Loop in
right.
actual Florida with the guys who aren't on TV as much or aren't on TV at all yet. So, you know, there is that difference that's going to happen. It's like, how do you film TV when you actually are starting to have so many of your TV, you know, stars, TV characters are outside of Florida for long periods of time touring? So, yeah, it might be better for them to kind of set some stuff up here, have some stuff in some interesting looking buildings like this. They do have problems finding venues that kind of fit their size that they need, the our traditional WWE TV property kind of venues. But on the other side, it's kind of nice going back to the world where wrestling shows that are in different buildings actually look like they're in a different building for once. So
yes,
that is kind of nice too, you know. So it's a double-edged sword in a way. It has its positives and its negatives.
Yeah, you know, it started off right here. I mean, I've been pretty negative on the Street Profits overall, but you know what? Here, seeing him in front of the San Antonio crowd, I liked him. And all was because they got a fresh reaction. They weren't just popping to the Street Profits stupidity spots. They were reacting to a match, and I really enjoyed it. I thought this was the opener. I thought that was a legit 3-star match. Really good Southern tag. It just, like, you know, you just could tell the Yaks were getting into it just because they were getting, you know, getting good reactions on stuff that New Sale never reacted to because they're just so used to it or they've seen it 8 billion times. But here they're reacting because these guys are viewed as big stars to the crowd who are here watching them on NXT. From NXT, so we got fresh reactions. Good spot for the crowd and all that stuff. I just thought this was a good Southern tag. I thought the Street Profits were good fighting underneath. I really liked Moss and Sabatelli on top beating the crap out of them. I thought the Street Profits sold well underneath. Their comeback was really good overall. And then their dance and kind of, you know, doing like the Texas dance, I thought was good, and to get over in front of the local audience, and I thought it was a really well worked match. You know, nothing fancy smancy, no intricate spots, just a good hard hitting Southern tag. And I mean, I think the Southern tag is like the easiest style to work to get a reaction, and I thought these guys worked it and they did a good job. And And it was built on, you know, the crowd was engaged into the personalities and into the what was going on in the ring. What you make of it, Timothy?
Yeah, I still have my issues. I'm not 100% behind Montez Ford like a lot of people seem to be, just because he comes across kind of like a cocky asshole, and I don't necessarily see that as a super babyface thing, even though I guess other people just buy into it. But the kind of some of his shenanigans and dancing before the match just, to me, come across a little bit too full of himself. But, you know, it's a different time. We live in a different world, and being full of yourself, being completely full of yourself, isn't necessarily seen as a bad thing all the time, I guess, now. It's not seen as like a heelish practice, so they could still be babyfaces. The match itself, once it got started, you hit it right on the head. I mean, Southern style tag match, lots of heat. I'm really getting into Moss more and more. Sabatelli's finally coming together to where he's not just like an embarrassment to watch, as he has been at times. Here he was really solid in his places when he needed to be. Actually hit some spots that looked good. Nice looking drop kick at one point. But Moss, to me, he's coming into his own. Really, his frame is just filled out big time to where he looks imposing, like he could easily be a big time champion. His wrestling is all basic, but looks like it hurts. The guy, to me, Moss, comes across like an old school wrestling star, the kind of guy that could easily carry a company, at least on the heel side, as someone that you just want to, you know, you believe in that he could come and beat somebody up, rub them up, and take some guys out. So I'm definitely getting behind both teams here. I think that they should keep them buried together a little bit more, but try to up the stakes, make their matches mean something so it doesn't get stale. But together, these teams are actually growing together, and they honestly kind of fit with each other all perfectly, as they're really two sides of the same coin. They're cocky ex-athletes who think really highly of themselves, but one of them just wants to party and have fun, and the other one wants to look down on everybody for not being as good as them. So I think it works out really well.
Now, the one thing I forgot to mention that I really liked in this match, there was like an interference spot where it looked like they were trying to steal the pin, but the ref caught him. I thought that was a great credibility spot for the ref, where it makes the ref look strong. And I'm not saying you need to make the ref look strong in matches, but sometimes they just make the ref. A lot of matches nowadays, they don't follow the rules, or they don't do this, or they do whatever they damn well want. But here, I liked it because it gave the ref some actual credibility as as a person who enforces the rules, and I really liked it. Then we get Dunn and Trent Seven, Tyler Bate recap, and then we get a Trent Seven and Tyler Bate interview. What'd you make of this?
It was good. I could do without, just because of me, because I'm so soured on it, but the kind of wink and nod to the British strong style tag match as they're kind of pointing out, they're like, oh, we're a team on the indies thing. I could have done without that, but that also, like I said, goes down to the fact that I was just so sick and tired of British strong style, honestly, being like the worst part of so many shows on the UK indies right now that I'm just like, I don't want to hear any reference to that shit at all. But that said, I thought it was pretty good. You're setting up that Pete Dunne, obviously, it's going to come back to bite him in the ass that he doesn't have anybody who trusts him, nobody that wants to work with him. And essentially, he's the champion. He's on the top of the mountain all by himself. And you got the Mustache Mountain, who are just, big time buddy-buddy with the former champion Bate and his kind of, I don't know what you even call him. He's not like his mentor, but his tag team partner who's older than him in Trent Seven, who, like, obviously they work well together, they're partners, they're going to come together to fight Bate there. So, good promo stuff, and I like that they follow it up later on with the Mandrews promo as well to make it make sense. So, just good stuff overall.
Yeah, the Mandrews promo was so smart, because I'm hearing this booked, I'm like, why the fuck is Andrews teaming with Dunn for? And they explained it. Well, Pete Dunn promised me a title shot if we win. Oh, okay. I can buy that. It's not super babyface decision for him, but it makes sense, and it's something I can at least buy into. I thought that was, if we didn't get that piece of business, I think I would have been really pissed going into that main event, honestly. What about you?
Yeah, I could definitely see that, and for me, kind of knowing that they're such close friends outside of NXT, outside of wrestling in general, I could kind of go like, but it does kind of ruin the narrative of NXT and what makes NXT better than a lot of the, UK indie shows right now that have so much of this kind of peeling away of the kayfabe, is that they at least take the time to pay attention to that detail. And I wouldn't have enjoyed the match nearly as much as I did if they hadn't put that in there.
And then with that said, we got this big Lars Sullivan vignette. I loved it. They're building him up for the monster push. And good, good, good. What do you make of this?
I'm with you. Phenomenal. Keep building this guy up. Make him the big-time star that he deserves to be, just based on everything that he's already done. And keep giving him the chances to prove that he deserves his spot, obviously. But, yeah, it's good stuff.
And then we got Kairi Sane versus Peyton Royce. What were your thoughts here?
Peyton Royce is just looking great. Really kind of got her poise together. Decent match. Loved her using her size in this match. Really important in this setting so that you can make it believable with Kairi Sane underdog selling. Kairi Sane has some like just unbelievably slick offense throughout. Crowd gets into her big time. There's something about her. She's super plucky underdog. Crowd loves her. Peyton was able to take advantage of that. Not a great match, obviously. Relatively long on it for what Kairi Sane has been having in not, like, big-time takeover matches. But that's probably smart because Peyton is actually going to have to be treated as a pushed commodity, especially now that they've lost so many girls from the NXT division, from the NXT roster, that Peyton's going to have to be pushed moderately seriously going forward, so she can't just be fodder for Kairi Sane to go through here. Good match, good near falls, good execution from both girls, and I'm gonna be interested to see what they continue doing with Kairi Sane, because I think that this kind of style may get old relatively quickly here if they just keep having her have essentially these same matches over and over again for too long.
Yeah, I can see that. I gave the match 2.5 stars, and Sane is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm still not connecting with her as a massive babyface. And I actually was more impressed with Peyton Royce's work here. I loved Royce's wobbly sell of the Rana. Like when she eats the Rana and she sells like she got dizzy. I loved it. Loved Billie Kay setting up the heat. I love that aspect of the match. I liked Royce's facial of the running elbow in the corner. Looked fantastic. Just a lot of the little things I thought Peyton Royce did really well on. I mean, is most people going to remember her damn wobbly sell off the Rana? No. Or the incredible face she showed when she ate an elbow? No. But it's something I respect, and it shows that she's trying to work on some other things to round out her game, and I think her expressions are her calling card, you know. So that's something that she needs to really to make her own, and I think that separates a lot of good workers from great workers is those little things, and hopefully that's she doesn't have a whole lot of great anything she does great, but she does have great, really good facials and has her moments. I thought she was really strong here.
Yeah, I mean, it was one thing I meant to point out, but even in the beginning of the match, she went from kind of playing around with Billie Kay to really serious, aggressive face, like at the drop of a hat, which I thought that she did a really good job there. So you're right. I mean, her facial acting is actually a big part of her skill set that she needs to continue to kind of work on using as much as possible, because it does make her stand out from the other girls, especially some of the indie girls who just tend to not have a lot of that talent when it comes to kind of facial acting that way.
You know, you mentioned the girls all getting called up. You find it weird that what's her name from Sanity? What's her name?
Nikki Cross.
Nikki Cross, who's probably the most over girl on the NXT roster, didn't get called up.
I wouldn't say I find it weird, because you could, you know, there's a Moon, I think, is just as good as any of the girls who got called up. I think you compare, you know, with DeVille getting called up, could it be really anyone?
And some of them we haven't even seen on TV in, like, forever, like Mandy.
Yeah, Mandy Rose, obviously Liv Morgan. I mean, realistically, the girls that they called up are like a mixture of not really ready in a lot of ways. That's why, okay, I kind of have a pet theory for what this is all about, because, you know, everyone's got their kind of conspiracy theory right now.
They're going to do a Rumble.
That they're going to do a Rumble, so they wanted extra people, that it's going to be that Paige is in charge of both groups. That's why they did the same thing on both shows. Why do they keep doing the same thing on both shows? Then you hear people talking about Sonya Deville and how she kind of has the MMA thing, and aren't you going to do the Horsewoman? And we talked about Shayna Baszler and all this. So this is kind of my pet theory on the whole thing, is I think that they did both teams at the same time to keep them kind of in some ways in your head connected. They're going to have them be equally strong. They're going to push them both strong. But they picked these girls because, I hate to say it, but it's like five girls who are not necessarily completely there. I think if they think if they get over really well, then that's a positive. If they don't, it's okay to dump them. Because I think what they're really going to use these girls for is just to get over, so that then the Horsewomen team can debut, destroy both teams on both shows, and kind of show off that they're invading outside force that's willing to go from both shows. They don't stick to just one brand. They can do whatever they want. And then you use that as an impetus to get like the four Horsewomen from NXT back together across brands to say like, oh, we have to go against this force that's taking on both shows, that's these outside girls, and we'll work together to take them out. And I kind of think that's why they're using them.
I will say I like that booking idea. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I feel like that's why it's girls that were not necessarily girls that are completely perfect and ready to go, because they're not, I don't think that they're really worrying about them getting over big time. I think they're just worrying about them serving a purpose.
Okay. And then we got Cien Almas, Drew McIntyre highlights. We find out McIntyre's going to be out for a bit. And it sets up Cien Almas's celebration next week. Any thoughts on that?
No, not really. I'm excited that they're hopefully going to take Almas seriously. He's definitely, I think he's going to be able to make this work as the champion. Honestly, the act with Vega is something that I'm excited about on the show. So
yeah, it's a money act.
Cool. Yeah,
money act. Then we got Mustache Mountain versus Dunn and Andrews. What were we thinking here?
I was thinking here that, I mean, I've watched Tyler Bate all over the Indies in the UK constantly, but he was on fire in the beginning of this match with some of these spots. I think as most places, he's not being allowed to work just pure babyface anymore. Here, he was like pure just babyface. And some of the stuff he was doing was so nutty and like flipping and flying. The big kind of over the top dive over Trent Seven, where he kind of, you'll see luchadors do it where they lock their feet on the dive over and do kind of a head scissors coming down. He did that without the head scissors, so he just came down into a senton on Dunn on the floor in front of a Seven. There was really super impressive. And the thing that popped into my head was like, you got Trent Seven, who looks the way he does, and you got WWE kind of fighting with Neville to keep him. And I'm like, why would they care? They have, like, Trent Seven, who's essentially able to do almost everything that Neville's able to do, and he's, like, you know, 5 or 6 years younger, maybe even
more. You mean Tyler Bate.
Yeah, with Tyler Bate being, like, 20 years old. And he's able to do all that stuff, immaculate body control, power game as well. Like, I'm just like, this guy is, and he's, like, in a, like, great shape. I'm just like, it's such a weird thing to think of WWE and the way that they fight with some guys and they push some guys and they don't focus on other guys. Because I'm like, what's really the big difference between Neville and Bate at this point, other than maybe a few more years of experience? The guy is just...
Abs.
Yeah,
abs.
Right? The abs, I guess. He's getting there. But yeah, the just Tyler Bate looked great. Really cool double team stuff. Pete Dunne and Andrews worked together here with the blind tags, was really fun. The Rana into the powerbomb was just sick. Such a cool spot, even if it looked... it looks like, what's the point of Dunn doing the powerbomb, because he's really not adding anything to it. I think it just looked really cool. Yeah, it was just... It was kind of impressive, and I like that in some ways they laid the groundwork. They talked about Pete Dunn and Andrews have known each other for a long, long time, without really nodding to the fact that they're, you know, best buddies. And then in the match, you didn't just, like, tell me, you showed me, as they worked so well together as a tag team. I kind of like that as a tease going forward. These guys could team up again, and you could make something out of it, because they worked so well together. I thought Seven did good taking the heat in the middle of the match, and yeah, I just thought really good stuff. I mean, great action, high pace. But compared to the tag match that opened up the show, I could definitely see kind of saying there's not as much of that Southern structure, not as much of that, you know, kind of trademark tag team drama. But this fit more with what people want to see nowadays, which is big spots, wild, you know, moves, stuff that they see, like stuff that they can be prepared for, big time taunting and all that stuff. So it's kind of about what the crowd wants to see. So I would say for me personally, it's like, it's kind of interesting to think about comparing the two matches that way. Obviously, the main event had a lot more action, but the, you know, the opening match may have had a little bit more drama. So. You know, it really comes down to what your preference is there.
Yeah, it's funny. I like the opening match better because I like the drama, but I can totally understand if you like the main event better. I would still give the main event a higher star rating, even though I liked the main of the opener more. If that makes any sense, because of what was going on. For me, what I had a problem with the main event was basically you had three baby faces and a heel. And so it was, psychology-wise, it had some issues. Like, it was part of the story, but it also, I thought it kind of detracted from the match with Andrews and Dunn not always getting along, that they didn't quite trust each other. And then you see Dunn turning on Andrews after the match. It's just like, you know, it's like, yeah, you're burning all your bridges, brother. Sometimes you got to play nice. But I thought the moves were really cool. But yeah, for me, it was like, sometimes Dunn makes his opponents look really stupid by, like, they get dumbed down by, you know, Dunn's about to do a cheap shot, yet his opponents don't know it, know it's coming. So at times, Dunn, as much as I like Dunn, sometimes he makes his opponents look kind of like, they're like the epitome of a dumb baby face. And I think it loses some credibility at times. And I thought we lost a little bit of credibility here at times where, you know, Dunn's going to give you the freaking punch. And why are you turning your back? You know, it's coming and he does it. And it just makes the baby faces look dumb. So I have some issues here and there on some of the aspects of the match, but athletically I didn't, because it was a great, it was athletically, it met up what you'd probably want in a great match. But some of the story I thought was lacking here. But overall, I enjoyed this foray into San Antonio. What about you?
Yeah, good stuff all around. I liked, like I said, I like that you're in a different building and it feels like you're in a different building. And I thought that the storytelling was, you know, pretty good in a lot of places here.
And, you know, the other thing, I think the reactions was the crowd, I think enjoyed the opening more, or they reacted more to the opener than they did to the main event, honestly.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I'd probably have to, like, watch them both again back to back to really
see. Then again, you know, they're also working in front of a Southern crowd, which, you know, so a Southern tag would probably work best in front of a Southern crowd.
Right, that's for sure. And, you know? I mean, and there is something to be said about what you said about Dunn. I think that he plays a little bit broad. I've even heard, you know, kind of my nitpicking about ACH being a little bit too cartoony. I had a good, you know, friend, Brock Yonke, call me out on that, saying, don't you think Pete Dunne kind of does the same sometimes? And I think he does. And I think a lot of it has been kind of his influence in WWE and kind of playing up that hilt with the buddies with Paul and all that stuff has kind of turned up a little bit of that kind of cartoonishness in some of the stuff that he does in a negative way. And I can definitely see where you're coming from. He turns every babyface into Sting and the Four Horsemen. It's like, doesn't everyone realize that Pete Dunne is supposed to be the worst, evilest asshole on the planet? Why do you guys ever have any doubt that he's not going to do a shitty thing to you? And they all always fall for it. So there is a good point there.
Yep. And on that note, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we're going to look at the latest offering from PWX on the High Spots Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. We're looking at PWX Unsanctioned. And it opens up with a Darius Lockhart versus Drew Adler match. I thought it was a solid enough opener. You know, it didn't really do anything for me. Gave it a star at 3 for us. They worked well enough. It was just there to get the star crowd going. I didn't find it terribly bad or engaging. It felt kind of flat for an opener. What about you?
Yeah, I had a lot of the same feelings. Nothing insane. Probably similar rating as you. Maybe 2 stars. Really didn't get much out of it. Darius Lockhart, I mean, God, his work in CWF, obviously, to me, has been better than here in PWX, where they're trying to push him as a champion and build him up. He's not bad, but I just think that they haven't really made him stand out, honestly. Yeah, you know, he picks up the win here, but I don't think he's much better for it. It honestly feels like he's just having a lot of exhibition matches and not really having really standout kind of wrestling competitions that make him feel like a big deal.
Babyface TV champion is also like a death knell, if you ask me. It's a tough position to do.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I can definitely see where you're coming from on that.
That's why always in the 80s, most of the TV champions, the long-term ones, were always heels. Like, you'd get a babyface here and there, like a Steamboat or a Dusty Rhodes or a Barry Windham, but they'd have a cup of coffee with it, maybe like a month or two with the belt. It was always the Regals, the Tullys, the Arns, getting the long runs with it because they were heels, and it's just easier to do the time limits and DQ finishes with the heel and be able to keep the belt and go forward. Always tougher with the babyface. Then we get Coach Mikey versus Tommy Thomas in a tuxedo match. You know, on paper, I like this for a heel versus babyface manager. But freaking A, Coach Mikey's just massive. And this was no Jim Cornette, Pauly Dangerously match. It didn't really engage me all that much. It was way too long. I did like Tommy Thomas trying to quit the match at the end. But hard to make this work because Coach Mikey is just so huge. I thought the post match was the most fun out of everything here. I felt this was a big miss. Give it a star. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. Probably like 3/4 of a star range for here. I don't see. Yeah, it's such a glaring difference between the old school days. You talk about Cornette. It used to be that the managers knew how to work, and that's why, you know what I mean? A lot of them were trained wrestlers before they were managers. And I think now a lot of guys who manage are guys who just didn't want to ever do, they didn't want to wrestle. They like wrestling, but they didn't want to wrestle. And a lot of them just seem to not even know what they're doing in there. So it really kind of affects, the quality of everything.
Yeah. Neither one of them was a leader here either. You know, like we talk, you're just making that point. I mean, in the back, you look at, you had Jimmy Hart, he was a ring general. You had Jim Cornette, a ring general. Bobby Heenan, a ring general, you know. You had guys who were just incredible in the ring. And, it just doesn't translate here in 2017 at all. I like the idea, but, man, it just whiffed.
Yeah, and Tommy Thomas just has major go-away heat for me. So I think no matter what, the guy's just not going to do it for me. So I just didn't get into it at all. I'm with you on pretty much everything you had to say about the match, really. The post-match stuff was fine, but realistically the match itself was not there for me. It should have been a lot quicker. If you just want to get to Tommy Thomas in his underwear, I think you could have got to that a lot faster without all the kind of added headache that I had to go through and sit through to get to this.
Amen, brother. What do you think of Tracer X and Ethan Case?
It was interesting. They're trying to tell a story on commentary of it being teacher versus student, but I really didn't get that from Case at all, other than him just kind of using some heel tactics. He didn't really show kind of his experience and him kind of having the advantage over Tracer from knowing him since he was just a student and stuff. I just really didn't get that at all. Just kind of some heel stuff instead. And then that plays into the finish to me in a negative way as well, as Tracer does a fake out to catch Case. It's like, oh, in the end, it was Tracer that you showed his experience and his history with Case being the way that he was able to figure out how to win the match. So it really, it felt like either Case just isn't good at telling that story of being the vet, trainer, teacher versus student, or they were trying too hard to get over this cutesy kind of thing. Of being like, oh, the student was able to outsmart the master kind of thing. And to me, they didn't set that story. So to me, you got to tell that story first and then you can pay it off with a finish like this. But when you don't do, you kind of don't pay off that part of it to begin with, then having this finish really just makes the whole thing kind of like a wet blanket. The action, everything else was really good. The guys know each other super well. So 2.5 star for the match, but I think the psychology was off.
Yeah, I'm with you. I give it 2.5 stars also. I'm also beginning to think that Ethan Case, one of the most overrated wrestlers around, because a lot of people I've heard really put him over as a great talent, and I'm not seeing it. I don't know if I've seen a really good match this year from the guy. I mean, I've seen some okay matches like this one, but nothing I can sink my teeth into. I want to say Tracer X's new gear is a huge improvement. Makes him look like a bigger star. The comedy opening was kind of like, do we need that here? I don't think so. It settles down into a match, then becomes kind of all action. But the finish was, again, screwy with the story they were telling. But yeah, I'm with you. 2.5 stars. What do you think of Effie versus White Mike?
I liked Effie. I thought that he played his character really well. The promo stuff in the beginning was good. The match itself is fine. They both, obviously, this is kind of the same thing showing what I was talking about earlier. These guys seem like they could both be managers who know how to wrestle as opposed to actual wrestlers. That said, I do know White Mike is better than I give him credit for, but he just comes across like such a gimmick sometimes that I forget. It breaks down. It's aggressive. It's emotional. It feels like a real fight at times, which I really like. But then, you know, it's cruising on its way to like a 3-star, mid-3-star match. And then the gimmicks break down, get the whipped cream, get other people involved, man scout, all this. So for me, it ends up 2.25. I really liked the table that they were setting, but, I thought that, they went a little too cutesy on the end. Especially weird for me having this breakdown with aggressive brawling and feeling like a fight. Throughout in the middle when you have the main event is supposed to be this big time lights out unsanctioned street fight. I wouldn't have anything else on the card that was kind of towing that same line, especially not something like this with two kind of gimmick wrestlers who are treated like comedy. I mean, why would you even risk kind of burning the crowd out on street fight violence on a card like this? So just all in all, that was a little odd to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. But you liked it much more than me. I give it 0.5 star. I will say Mike's Rat-Bera jacket rules, okay? Which is a playoff of the Ribera Japan jacket. Awesome. Mike, with that Ase moonsault off the guardrail was freaking awesome. But I just couldn't get into it. I don't know what it was. I never was able to sink my teeth into it. Everything, I thought it was just a total fucking chaotic train wreck. Just hated it. That leaves us to Anthony Henry versus Fred Yehi. You know, online, I told Anthony Henry that I thought this was my favorite match of the three they've done this year. And I want to say I was wrong, and I lied to him pretty much, I guess. Not on purpose, because at the time I believed that. But after watching it again for the show, I clearly thought this was their third best. I thought their second match was their best. Their first 30-minute draw was the second best, and this is their third best. But here they had some stuff going, advantage that I liked, where they had clear roles here. Fred Yehi was clearly the babyface. Anthony Henry was clearly the heel. So I liked that. I liked the grappling. Liked Yehi destroying the arm. Anthony Henry. I like Amber setting up Henry's heat. Good back and forth stuff. I enjoyed the version of the Dusty finish here, especially in the Carolinas. So I kind of liked it. And you got to remember, this is a kind of like a territory promotion. So this finish is a way to not hurt Henry and not to hurt Henry or supposed to give Henry heat, get heat on Henry and not hurt Yehi. So it kind of worked for me, but it was a little too clunky and a little too quick. So I'm not sure if it totally worked for me here. But as an homage in the Carolinas for Dusty Rhodes' version of a Dusty finish, I gave it 3 3/4. Still enjoyed it, but it was just lacking something. I don't know what. What'd you make of it, man?
I think I had some similar feelings as you. I think Henry, he works this go-go-go style fest here, even as a heel, which I wish that he would just kind of tone it down a little bit as a heel. We've seen him do it in Anarchy, and I really enjoyed that. I just kind of wish he would do it here in PWX, but I think that he he might see some, you know, there's some internet buzz more on PWX than Anarchy, so maybe he's just trying to work to that crowd. I liked the finish being quick when you talked about that part. I actually really enjoy that if you're going to do a restart that you get it over with quickly. I don't think that you should draw out kind of the restart part of the match to be too long, personally. If you're going to do something like this, if you're going to like actually have a real finish on the restart, sure, take as long as you need. But if you're going to just do a fuck finish on a restart, I think you should always go as fast as possible. Just enough.
No, I'm with you on that. I thought they should. Anthony Henry should have played it up more when he got the win.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
I said more celebrating. I wasn't really clear on what I was saying.
Okay.
There.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah, that said, I think that I think for me, I think their first match was their best. I liked the time limit draw the most, personally, but that was just me. And then probably the second match, and then this. I thought that there was some good stuff from Yehi throughout. I liked the hanging up kicks, the bicycle up kicks, in the corner. I thought was really good. I thought Yehi working over the core, the back, and the chest like that was really nice that he stayed on that. Nice spike pile driver for a really good near fall, I thought there. But I thought, you know, works for me. Great heel champ finish. You know, the cheating, the restart, everything. Like I said, I just wish that he would tone down the go-go-go a little bit more. That said, I gave the match 3.25 star. I thought it was really good action from both guys. Nice focus from Yehi. Just all in all, good stuff. I just wish that we could get a little bit more heelishness out of Anthony Henry here, or at least kind of more of your typical heel Anthony Henry, you know?
He uses heel charisma, but he needs to do a little bit more, maybe like a finger poke or, you know, an eye rake or something like that. Just some of his movesets would be a little more heelish,
I would honestly, I would love some of that, and I would love just not giving the crowd the big dives, the big double stomps, all that stuff, and just kind of keep it a little bit more grounded.
If he's going to do it with, like, Amber distracting the ref or to something to that effect to set it up and for a reason why he's doing it or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Then we got the James Drake versus Syndicate thingy, Bob, here. What were you thinking here?
I felt more like an angle just to kind of help get some heat back on Drake after losing the feud to Anthony Henry. I think it was for that purpose. It did really well because you show him essentially being able to take on this whole stable if he wanted to, but they're kind of continuously cheating and getting involved. Then you get the Ducks coming out to set up the TLD match, was it, or the DLC match? Ducks, Ladders, and Chairs. Good stuff for me, all in all, I think. But like I said, this felt a lot more like an angle than an actual match. But it served its purpose.
When you have James Drake on the show, you're disappointed when it's just like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah.
Clearly, this was just fodder to set up the big, I'm just going to call it a ladder match next show, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know why you need to combine Drake and the Ducks in it anyway, tell you the truth.
You're kind of putting together two of your top acts who always deliver big matches, so you're kind of cutting down your card.
James Drake has been like I don't want to call it a guilty pleasure, but the dude's been having a hell of a year. And then we got this spot. It was just like, ugh. And then this leads us to, who are the two girls wrestling?
So I know that one girl was, I think, Lacey Kane or Lane.
Lacey Lane versus Cammy Kim?
It was Camille, or, yeah, Camilla.
Camille Kim?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Okay, yeah, this was just eh.
Yeah. Felt like they were rushing. They really did. They were going too fast through their spots. They were doing drills in class. They weren't really having a wrestling match. I don't think that they're ready to be on shows, and especially not shows this size that are on tape, honestly.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Then we get the main event. John Skyler, Corey Hollis, False Count Anywhere. I'm going to say one thing, and I'll let you take it from there, is it felt like PWX took and learned from the Jeff Hardy, Caleb Conley, or was it Jeff Hardy and somebody that we reviewed where we couldn't see a whole lot of it with the brawling?
Oh, it was Sammy Callahan and Jeff Hardy, yeah.
Okay, but here they did a great job following the action and following them everywhere, And it felt like they learned, like, hey, we better be so ready to do this. And like, it felt like the agent knew exactly what the fuck they were going to be doing. And I probably because that agent was Corey Hollis or John Skyler or both of this match and told exactly the camera crew where we're going. And that paid off in the long run. What'd you make of this match, though?
I think.
Do you think I'm right on? I mean, shot this much better than that.
Oh, last, yeah,
that one thing.
Yeah, no, insanely better than that. The match itself, I thought was fine. I thought that So this is what it kind of screamed to me, and it's maybe, you know, it's not fair to judge it in this way, but it's because it's kind of meta, or not even meta, but like kind of postmodern. But when Brian Alvarez on his podcast would talk about him and Buddy Wayne intentionally going to territories and booking year-long storylines and feuds so that they would only have to work with each other because they didn't trust all the other people in the territory and they wanted to have easy nights. And it almost felt a little like that, like these guys... Not to say that they didn't work hard, but they weren't risking getting injured even in, like, this blood feud match. Like, they were really safe with each other. They took care of each other. And they were just having this, like, nice, long storyline with each other that's, like, they don't have to deal with all these other fuckers in the company. They can just deal with each other that they trust. So I got a little bit of that out of this. That said, they brought some good emotion. There was, you know, it wasn't... It's not like the top level fiery stuff like that you'd expect. You know, there's some good blood. There's some good gimmicks. There's some nice back and forth. Great punching. There's some solid selling. I really thought that they did a good job, yeah, with the like kind of wobbling, punching back and forth. You know, the blood loss selling did a great job as well. Just, you know, the spear on the apron I thought looked great. But for a blow off from what should be a big time, you know, feud ending, year long storyline, I think it wasn't as good as I would have hoped for. Didn't have as much like fire and emotion as I had really, really wanted to see. But I think that it was good for what it was on this show. I think I also, part of it too, is I probably paint it negatively because I didn't really get into the feud the whole way through. So for me, like I wasn't as emotionally invested in it as I could have been. But yeah, realistically, not like, I don't think this is match of the year level. I'm probably at like 3.5 star, really kind of was hoping for maybe some more here. But that also goes into just 2017 and you see so much like blood and guts that just goes insane for matches that have like no storyline build that in my head, I'm like expecting if this has been building up for a year that someone should die at the end of it. And that kind of is also part of just the unfortunate situation that we're in and what wrestling has become in 2017, more than like kind of an attack on this match itself.
I liked it a little more than you. I gave it 3.75, but it was flawed. It was, a brawl. I don't think a brawl needs to go. I think these guys went 30 minutes or so, 25 minutes. I think a brawl is a sweet spot from 12 to 17 minutes is where you need to make it. I love the blood. I love them brawling around the arena. I love them going into the men's rooms, giving each other swirlies. I find it nasty as fuck when you're rolling around in a damn toilet stall and stuff. I enjoyed that. I wish they could have cut down on the weapon shots a little bit and made them a little bit more personal. That's where I thought they went a little too gimmicky. But it still was hard hitting stuff. But I just wish they would have made less is more. But I know 2017 is more about the toys and stuff than the actual hatred. But I thought they did a good job on the build here into it, where they could have relied on that, the storyline aspects more than the toys, but they didn't. And I gotta say, I absolutely love the post match of the new Country Jack with Gunnar Miller and the other guy. So I like Corey Hollis with those guys as backup muscle going forward, but I thought post-match, I thought that was a tremendous angle to push this feud even further. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing where they're going to go with it. Because I am invested in Hollis. I think Gunnar Miller is a blue chipper. And this other guy is also another big boy who looks like he has a lot of potential. So I'm all in on seeing on where they're going with it. I'll tell you that, though. Overall, I got to give the show a thumbs in the middle. There's a lot of good stuff, a lot of shit. The payoff, the blow-off, like you said, I just didn't. It was good, but it just didn't knock me out of my part. They were just, just some wasted talent, like James Drake not getting a great match. Ethan Case, Tracer X match kind of under-delivering in a way. The opener under-delivered a little bit. I think that's what it was. I think all the matches under-delivered a little bit on what they could have been. This is a show on paper that sounded like it could have been a hell of a lot of fun, even the manager's match on paper, if it was the right managers, could have been fun. If it was Stokely Hathaway and hell, Jimmy Hart, I think would have been a blast. but that's not what we got. We got this. So it hurts not having the Ducklings actually on the show either. So even though they were in the building, it's what it was. What'd you make of it, man?
Final thoughts. Mixed bag of a show. I agree with you. I think that nothing was terrible, but everything kind of under-delivered in a way that really kind of just made it a turn-off of a show, made me a lot less into it as I could have been. That said, very... very watchable for the most part. There's definitely some stuff that can be skipped, but nothing that's just like completely terrible. I probably thumbs in the middle show just for a couple. Like, God, it's tough for me because I don't necessarily know. I might even say it's a thumbs down show, honestly, which is kind of sad, but that's just, like I said, that's just for me because of my expectations probably going in more than anything. So I could definitely see someone else being a little, like, other people being higher on the show overall just because they didn't have as many expectations.
All right, man, where can we find you, man? What do you got going on?
Same old, the Lucha Undead podcast. Got an interesting interview, should be coming out in a couple days here, kind of branching out, interviewing some different first-time guests from outside of the wrestling world, we'll say. And then Psychology is Dead, Top 50 Wrestlers of 2017 podcast with me and Quentin, should be coming out shortly. We are planning to record that.
I'm looking forward to that one. Those are always interesting.
Yeah, so we'll break
it
down.
Even if I disagree with you guys sometimes, I still find it interesting.
Well, you should disagree with us, honestly, because, we have different opinions, different purviews of what we're watching. So it's definitely a lot of fun for me and Quentin to do it, especially even this year. Some people might think that me and Quentin are just completely on the same page. We do host podcasts, kind of pod blast together, talking about shows that we like. But we also both watch a lot of different stuff, have a lot of different opinions on stuff. Unfortunately, I think we both were talking about it, and we're going to have a pretty major blind spot for both of us this year in the Joshi category. So if you're looking to hear about the top 50 Joshi workers of the year, I'd say go look for anything coming out of Alex over there at Noah's_Savior on Twitter for your Joshi coverage, because we do not have that for you. But it's definitely going to be a lot of fun. Hoping to keep that under 8 hours this year, but you know how it can be with these podcasts. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
And follow me on WorldCast Wednesdays on WorldCast. We review World Class Championship Wrestling. For right now, we're in 1982, actually in May of 1982. And follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Have a great week, guys, and keep on watching wrestling. Laters.